Baptist 21 is a pastor-led voice for Southern Baptists in the 21st century. The B21 podcast will discuss current issues in the SBC with Southern Baptist church leaders. To check out more resources, visit us at baptist21.com.
Hey, welcome to the Baptist 21 podcast. My name is Jed Coppinger. I'm so excited to have Dr. Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, with us today. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Allen.
Yeah, delighted to be with you guys. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. There's a lot going on in Southern Baptist life right now. There always is, and it's always a mix of a little bit of the good, the bad, and maybe a little bit of the ugly. But from your vantage point in Southern Baptist life, what are you most encouraged by right now? And as you just kind of think about as we move forward together, what are some of the biggest challenges you see ahead of us?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Before I get into that, I do want to make an observation. I'm here with you and Nate, and we're about the same age. And, you know, you guys not that long ago were referred to as young leaders. And like, do we still get the descriptor as being young leaders or not? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Only in Southern Baptist life. Only in Southern Baptist life. You get it until you're 60.
That's right. That's right. Okay. We're going to continue to own that mantle. We're young leaders here. Man, thank you for the question. Again, thank you guys for having me on the podcast and appreciate what B21 has done over the years and y'all's personal just commitment to the SBC and your work, not only at the annual convention, but through podcasts and events and resources like this. Look, I'm kind of born an optimist, so I'll confess on the front end. I wake up every morning kind of excited about the day, excited about what's before me, and really with a bullish outlook on life and ministry. So that may skew my answer a touch, but I'm genuinely encouraged about Southern Baptist life. Now, there are challenges. I'm sure we'll get into some of those here momentarily, but let me tell you a few things I'm encouraged about. First of all, you know, the old saying, all politics is local. Well, for me, kind of all ministry begins local. And so this is not a crass Midwestern Seminary plug, but I'm just genuinely encouraged about what God's doing there. And I'm just very thankful. I'm in my eighth year. And the Lord has really blessed the ministry, really is blessing the ministry. And so on Kansas City, when I'm around our students, interacting with our faculty, leading that institution, it brings me significant joy and tremendous encouragement. Now, I'm encouraged, then you zoom out nationally. Let me tell you some things I'm encouraged about. I'm encouraged about all six Southern Baptist seminaries. I truly am. They're led by admirable men, served by great faculties and staffs, and attracting not only a large quantity of students, but a great quality of students as well. And again, just to put that in some context, we really are in a golden era of theological education in the SBC, I truly believe. And I've argued that previously in print before, the number of students we have, the quality of leadership. As we record this conversation, we're in Nashville, here for meetings of the executive committee. And last night, Ronnie Floyd pointed a vision for the convention, Vision 2025, where he set forth very bold goals, but things that aren't like from Mars, things that actually, okay, this like is attainable. If we will focus on these goals, these are attainable. And so Dr. Floyd's strong, clear, and impassioned leadership from that position has not only a catalyzing effect for our collective work, but also think it has a congealing effect, mm-hmm. kind of pulling us together around that vision. And then, of course, the mission boards, what NAM is doing, IMB with Paul Chitwood, and look, all the entities. I mean, I'm just very proud to be a Southern Baptist. And not only proud, I'm encouraged. And that's where you have, you know, the real world, the fake world, the social media world. I'm not one who dismisses all the social media world. I mean, generally, those are real people with real opinions. But at the same time, I can't look and let the social media interpretation of Southern Baptist work be perceived as an accurate interpretation of Southern Baptist work. So I'm encouraged by those things and much more, frankly.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. You mentioned just how you're encouraged about what's going on around Midwestern and Kansas City there and beyond. You've been there, been president for a little over 7 years.
That's right. Yeah, about.
And so you've seen explosive growth in a lot of ways. I mean, record growth. You've even brought a Super Bowl to the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know how you did that.
And a World Series.
And a World Series. So it's been a great 7 years. Here in Tennessee, we'll forgive you one day for putting our Titans out. But as you think about the last 7 years and the growth and just the way God's blessed Midwestern, it's been so fun to watch. But it's really been at a time where that's been the opposite story for most theological institutions, especially outside of Southern Baptist life. theological education, higher education in general, there's so many different factors at play here that are making it more and more difficult to do what you have done, or do what God's done through y'all in Kansas City at Midwestern. What do you think some of the things, you know, by God's grace, he gets the glory, but practically things that you if you could do it again, you'd say, man, these really were the right decision, and things you think maybe you would have done differently?
Yeah, boy, that's, you rolled up a lot in that question. And so let me try to unpack it and give you a coherent answer. First of all, the context, you're absolutely right. Theological education in America, in North America, in the world, generally is undergoing significant challenge. The average accredited institution, accredited by ATS, has about 140 students, okay? Well, all the Southern Baptist seminaries are at least 10 times that. And so when people talk about the Southern Baptist seminaries, perhaps the best thing we have going for us, and if you look at us historically the past 100 years, it is a little bit anomalous. But the best thing we have going for us is the fact we only have six seminaries and not 12 or 15 or 20. If you look at the amount of membership we have, and if you look at how that stacks up percentage with institutions compared to other denominations, we actually have only a handful of seminaries when you compare it to the size of the denomination, which, looking back historically, given how ambitious Southern Baptists were in the middle of the 20th century when they were starting seminaries, it's almost surprised they didn't start another six, you know. So the Southern Baptist seminaries are behemoths when you compare them by way of enrollment to other non-SBC seminaries. Generally speaking, look, God has been really, really kind. And I use the phrase kind providence. That's not just me being humble, though I want to be humble about it. That's just an honest assessment. We went from about 1,100 students to this year finishing with well north of 4,000. That growth does not continue forever. No growth continues forever. But we are really, really thankful where God has moved us. I think if I were just to itemize a few reasons, if I can use that word, first of all, I do think the vision of an institution being sold out for the church has just resonated really broadly with Southern Baptists. And folks, I mean, I hear it all the time, Jed. You know, man, for the church, I love your vision. I love your vision. I love your vision. That's not to suggest other seminaries aren't serving the church. Of course they are. But every seminary has to distill their vision and calling down to something. And we've distilled it, ours down to those three words and have sought to be really, really committed to those three words. I would say additionally, man, God has just blessed us with an incredible team. And I mean, I am so honored to get to serve with the individuals I get to serve with. I mean, great followers of Christ, creative thinkers, hard workers, tremendous interpersonal rapport. To me, to go to faculty meeting is a joy. For me to go in, you know, an all-day executive leadership work session is a joy. And so you have people who resonate and believe in the same vision that I've led us to embrace, and not only, you know, kind of agree with it, but bleed it as well. And so they're committed. And then look, convictionally, I believe God honors those who honor his word and honor the Great Commission. And so we try to keep it simple and clear about what we believe and why we're doing what we're doing. And the Lord's been pleased to honor that. And then, look, there have been other, you know, kind of touch points of very kind providence, you know, unexpected generous contributions, things that were kind of, you know, accelerants to enable us to undertake some projects of desperately needed building and otherwise, launch some initiatives that we thought were opportune. And so God's just been really kind. And so I'm now, you know, kind of almost midway through my seventh year. And I look back, I'm astonished how quickly years have passed. I mean, I went, my kids were 9 to 4. Now they are 17 to 11. And it's like, man, there's like growing up. And it's kind of like this almost a metaphor for how the school's growing up. And we've had to live with those growing pains of how you accommodate that growth and how you fund that growth and where you put faculty and where students study. And God's given us a student center. And it's like a family that's grown. You're having to figure out, man, where do we put the fifth kid in the bedroom? And, you know, all those things you're having to work through. We're having to do that real time. But it's a joy to have to struggle with those things. Yeah.
Now would be a good time to tell you about our sponsor for the Baptist 21 podcast, The Pillar Network. If you're a pastor interested in leading your church to partner with a community of like-minded SBC churches that are doctrinally aligned, missionally driven, and committed to fulfilling the Great Commission by equipping the next generation of pastors to both plant and revitalize churches, then consider joining The Pillar Network. You can find out more information at thepillarnetwork.com. That's thepillarnetwork.com.
You mentioned just the health, not only at Midwestern, but seminaries across Southern Baptist life. You know, one of the discussions going on right now, larger Southern Baptist discussion, and again, it's tough to know how much of it's just online, how much of it's taking place in all the different places that Southern Baptists do their lives. just about higher education and about ideas. And you think about critical race theory. You think about the other Resolution 9. You think about views on sexuality, views on politics. It's ideas as Southern Baptists that we're really wrestling with. So much so that this past week there was a new network announced, the Conservative Baptist Network, along with it seems a partnership with Mid-America Seminary and other things. And so networks and associations have happened before. They're going to happen again. As you think about our kind of moment right now, as we make our way forward to this Southern Baptist Convention and just all the different things that are taking place and unique factors with social media and all the rest, what do you make of it? I mean, how are you guys, from your vantage point, thinking about that and encouraging your students, encouraging the pastors you have influence with to think about these kinds of issues, these kinds of disagreements as we try to move forward better together?
Yeah, well, you asked, again, kind of a stocked question there, a lot crammed into that question, so let me try to coherently think through it with our listeners and with you guys.
It's all real simple issues. So
right, I mean, that's right. Let me just generalize, stereotype, broad brushstrokes here and move right along. No, look, I not to try to sound, you know, spiritually mature, I really do, though, seek to engage life and other believers in a charitable way. I do take pride in this. I try not to take pride in much. I do take pride in this. I'm in my eighth year. I literally do not know of a Southern Baptist who's called me pastor, who's called or written or emailed me that I just have blown off. I mean, I work really hard to respond to inquirers about Midwestern Seminary. Now, again, I tell people this. It's hard to believe. About once every year or two over the past 7.5 years, I've had someone write me complaining that Ralph Elliott teaches at Midwestern Seminary. And so, you know, Ralph Elliott hasn't been there in over 50 years, and he left in 61. But again, yeah. Sometimes word travels slowly. I write them back respectfully, say thank you. I appreciate your concern. But, you know, here's the story of Ralph Elliott. I wrote an article on it a few years ago. And by the way, he hasn't been in Kansas City since, you know, 1961. So my point is, I really do want to be responsive. So in as much the CBN represents concern and questions about the theological convictions of us in leadership, entity heads, and others, I'm not going to dismiss this. I'm going to respond respectfully and clearly and forthrightly. And so when this kind of came through the social media and I was emailed about it, I guess I'm on somehow this group's email distribution list, I didn't think they're idiots. I didn't think, you know, literally I thought, like, should I sign up for this? I mean, because convictionally what they're saying is who I am and it's who I know Southern Baptist to be. And I've even had a couple of faculty members ask me, you know, like, should we sign up for that or can we? I was like, well, of course you can if you want to. I mean, I don't know what it is at this point. It's evidently an email list. They're going to send out some updates. And there are worse things in Southern Baptist life than people being vigilant about sound doctrine. So like, I don't look at that defensively or dismissively. Now, if this is leading to, and I don't know that it is, but let's say hypothetically, this is leading to some type of alternative proposal to the cooperative program, well, then that would be a different conversation, and I would have much more significant concern. If this in more real, tangible, clear ways becomes something divisive or something that begins to frame or represent individuals or institutions in ways that are not accurate, well, then I'd be far more alarmed. So I'm kind of like you guys. I just got the email, and you know, I see something on social media and don't know what it is, and I want to assume the best and hope the best. But I will say this: you mentioned critical race theory. I was visiting with a member of the executive committee here last night about it, and I said, "Look, one of the upsides of Resolution 9 and the challenge that was and is that a whole lot of people now are more aware of critical race theory and are more understanding why there are challenges associated with it, problems associated with it." And I told the member of the executive committee last night talking, we were having a very warm conversation. I said, look, I am yet to meet a Southern Baptist the past year since June that is saying, I believe critical race theory. I want to teach critical race theory. I'm defending critical race theory. So my point, that little analogy is, Jed, I think if you were to maybe the distinction between Jason Allen's frame of mind and perhaps personalities associated with the CBN at this juncture is this. I don't think there's a convictional difference that I've seen yet, but I think the extent to which there are legitimate concerns in our fellowship is – I mean, I occasionally hear things that you know, a video clip will come out of a teacher saying this or a preacher saying this that makes me wince. And so I realize that there are artifacts – of things being said at times, like, well, you know, wish that person would elaborate, or what did he mean by that, or, you know, why are we having, you know, this speaker at the pastor's conference, you know, things that kind of pop up that makes you like, well, is this wise? But as far as people entrenched and intentionally teaching things or believing things outside of our confessional expectations, I'm not interacting with those people. I'm not seeing those people. So anyway, that's kind of my take here, and I hope I didn't offend anyone or tick anyone off here, but that's just how I'm seeing it at this point.
Yeah, no, it's helpful. You know, you mentioned just how you handle disagreement, posture that you have towards them. You're going to hear them. You're going to respond to them. Southern Baptists have always disagreed. We're going to disagree. We've got 45,000 or however many plus churches out there. It's just going to be disagreement. But we can grow in how we disagree. How would you coach people listening to this or encourage people listening to this? How can we do a better job of disagreeing without being disagreeable towards one another so that we can be better together?
Yeah. Man, again, I'm trying to model this, not doing it, I'm sure, as consistently as I should or could. First of all, just not assuming the worst. I mean, love hopes all things, believes all things, bears all things. So on occasion in ministry, there are genuine bad actors. And like, that's grieving when you encounter those people. They're rare, but they are there. Oftentimes, there are people who misunderstand what you say or even unintentionally misrepresent what you say. And so I just think, you know, taking a deep breath, saying, okay, well, I don't think they would intentionally do this. And that's why, you know, occasionally I'm, you know, critically referencing a blog or something, and more frequently, you know, through social media. And like, I don't, you know, do a counterattack or counterstrike when it happens, because I just say, you know, I guess, you know, for some reason, you know, they misunderstand or you know, they're not handling this as I would like it handled, but I'm not going to respond. I have responded once in recent months just because the article was just a fabrication. It's like, it's just made up. I mean, there's not like a misunderstanding or a, you know, this is just like a made up story. And so I responded to that just because it was so inaccurate. And it occurred to me, I said, man, if they'll just like make up a story about me and lobbying for immigration, which is, you know, a whole nother topic, then what's the stuff them just making up a story saying they saw Jason Allen with a woman in St. Louis? You know, if someone's just going to manufacture a story, then what's to stop them from manufacturing something that could be ultimately disqualifying from ministry? So I responded. Jed, you know, social media is just very vexing because you want to be on it to know and occasionally to contribute to the conversation. But I think some people, I know some people have an expectation that guys like me should be kind of micro-assessing other pastors, other speakers, other authors, other convention leaders. And I mean, as dysfunctional as we at times feel, could you imagine the dysfunction if all of us were kind of micro-commenting on what this church is doing, or that pastor's doing, or that seminary's doing, or that mission board's doing? I mean, it would go from bad to worse so quickly. Plus, I have a day job, and I have a family. And I just refuse to work for Mark Zuckerberg on Facebook or Twitter and then the people. And that's why I wrote an article here in recent weeks about denominational discourse and just encouraging people. I know it sounds overly simplistic, but if you have a concern, write, email. I mean, I know I respond, and insofar as I know, my colleagues at other entities respond, and I mean, do, like, express that. But I, you know, I'm not going to shut down my life every time someone adds me on Twitter and throws out an accusation, or, you know, I mean, because that takes them 5 seconds to do, and then what am I supposed to do, give 5 hours to typing them a response essay? I mean, it's just you can't live that way.
Right. Yeah. Dr. Allen, thank you so much for taking the time in the midst of a busy schedule to talk with us about these important issues. Thanks for your leadership at Midwestern, and look forward to the days ahead.
You guys are so kind. Thank you.